Yeah, I know. You're having to pick yourself up off the floor. It's another episode of Leaning Toward Wisdom. It has been the last episode. I had to go look. June the 20th, 2018. And today, as I hit the record button, it is September the 4th, 2018. Got to be, I don't know, I haven't gone back to look, has to be one of the biggest gaps in Leaning Toward Wisdom episodes ever. And I've had some gaps, so I'm a gap expert. I appreciate you clicking play. My name is Randy Cantrell. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. I want to talk to you today about reducing the friction in your head that causes your failure. Now, we've got all kinds of friction, but let's kind of focus on the internal stuff. First, let me update you just a tad. I've had a real hard time. I've had a real struggle in this podcast since I reiterated it for the umpteenth time. So much of the podcast revolved around music and inspiration from the music, and frankly, it still does, although I just don't play snippets of the music. I'm playing it safe. Yeah, I'm playing it safe. And it really, it just took all the wind out of my sails. I was absolutely in love with the format, just positively in love with playing music and then riffing about what that music had kind of inspired in within me and the thoughts that it erupted inside my head, and gave that up, did that intentionally. It was strategic. There were no threats. There was no compelling event that caused it, other than I just, you know, it wasn't safe. It just wasn't safe. And I'd never gotten into any kind of trouble. In fact, quite the contrary, I had only gotten high praise, and even some PR firms and publicists for various artists reached out and connected with me. So it was all good. It was just, you know, wasn't quite, I'm going to avoid the word. I'm going to avoid the L word. So anyway, I've had a hard time. So reducing the friction in your head that causes your failure. I know something about it. Well, I know something about the friction in your head that causes failure. I'm not sure that I've got all the answers. In fact, I know I do not have all the answers to reducing that friction. Our lives get disrupted. My life gets disrupted every single day. And it's not fun in the moment, but I suspect it's profitable. It can be profitable even minutes later. Disruption is defined as disturbance or problems that interrupt an event, activity, or process. Disturbance or problems that interrupt an event, activity, or process. In my case, the event, the activity, or the process is my life. Everybody wants traction. We need traction in a relationship, in a career, in business. Pick the endeavor, doesn't matter. You need traction. We want to get traction, and we want to get it as quickly as we can. And so if we stick with that metaphor, we don't want to spin our wheels. We don't want to just press the gas pedal and nothing happens. We don't go anywhere, because whether it's mud, whether it's snow, whatever, the wheels are turning. The car's working perfectly fine, but the tires just aren't getting any traction. As a result, we're not going anywhere. We're not moving forward. And we certainly aren't moving forward fast, because that's what we want. Traction is friction. I mean, think about it. The tire in the snow, the tire in the mud, there's not enough friction for traction. And so we need friction. But it's got to be the kind of friction that we need, the kind of friction that we want for progress. Because that tire spins in the mud or spins in the snow, and the tire is going to get hot. Well, in the snow, it's just going to melt the snow and make the problem worse. But tire on pavement is friction. Now, there's another kind of friction that inhibits us. It stalls us. It sticks us. It's the kind of friction that foils our success. And you often hear it mostly when people say, you know, I'm stuck. That's a friction. That's an inhibiting friction. So there's all kinds of frictions. Much of them are in our head, which can bring about physical friction. But they're very real. They're just very real. So let's talk about it. Let's think about it soberly, and then let's see if we can't figure out a few actions to take to move us forward. as I was thinking about this in the early days of my retailing career back in the 70s, there were quite a lot of things that retailers would put in glass cases. I'm not talking about jewelers, but just ordinary retail companies would put things in glass cases, things that were small and high dollar, and as a result, probably could be prone to theft, internal or shoplifting. And so they got put in glass cases, and it became very clear to me over time that as retailing changed and as the buying public changed, those glass cases were really nothing more than vaults of friction that prevented customers from even buying those products. You know, because the friction point is I've got to go up, I've got to get somebody to help me, and then I've got to be brave enough to ask them, can I see that? Can you tell me about it? Just too many points of friction. Easier to just not fool with it. Maybe easier in the day to buy it by way of mail order. So no surprise when Amazon comes down the pike and disrupts. Disruption is defined as disturbance that interrupt or problems that interrupt an event, activity, or process. Well, Amazon disrupted retail because retail is filled with friction. I have to get in my car. I have to drive to the store. I have to walk in. I kind of have to hope people will just leave me alone because I just want to go find what I want. I don't want anybody to bother me. Or maybe I do want to be, I want help. I want to find somebody. I can't find anybody. Where in the world are all the, you know, it's one extreme or the other, but these are all friction points, and Amazon completely obliterated the friction points. And as a result, Amazon got tremendous traction and got it relatively quickly and then went into every category on the planet beyond books, which is where it started. So let's think about ourselves and let's think about the friction in our head. And rather than preach, which is what I really don't do, as you well know, I pretty much share stories and they tend to be personal. And while I know there's this rule of public speaking of using too many personal illustrations and that sort of a thing, I'm coming at it, as you well know, if you've listened to me for any length of time, from a different perspective, and that is shared experiences. Increasingly, I am leaning heavily into the wisdom of sharing experiences. Well, it's easier for me to share experiences from someone else if they have shared that experience with me. Then I can pass it on. But it's easier for me to share my experiences in hopes that it can help you. Now, this is not done from some narcissistic point of view. This is not done from some, hey, look at me, which I know is how the world works. And I get it. I understand, you know, the need for whatever, the need for approval. I would tell you that I suffer from that, and I do to a small degree, but I've never suffered from it too terribly much, and the older I get, I suffer from it even less. I'm a guy who really doesn't mind being hated by some. I just would like to be loved by a few, and when I say few, I mean few. That's okay. I'm good with that. But we've got an awful lot to learn from one another. And this is a platform, leaningtowardwisdom.com is a platform where I can share my experiences with you in hopes that it can help you and serve you. And the underlying hope for me personally is that it sparks within you maybe to reach out and to share something with me that can help me. Because I can learn by thinking through and talking through my experiences with you, but I can learn an awful lot more by listening to you. But since this is my podcast and my platform, then this is how we'll roll. Let me talk to you about my business, because it is the current friction in my head that's causing failure, because I'm in the throes of trying to disrupt my business. Now, my business, which started nearly a decade ago, was really what I have labeled hardcore roll your sleeves up, get your hands dirty consulting. That is doing the work. And the work could be anything from marketing to sales to succession planning to cash flow management, you name it. But was doing the work. And I hated it, hated every minute of it. I'm an operator. I've been an operator since I was in my 20s. That is operating businesses. And not everybody's an operator. So let's make a distinction here so you're not confused. Entrepreneurship today is considered to be really a badge of honor. I grew up, and I'm so old school, I couldn't tell you how old I was before I first heard the word entrepreneur. It was just not in the vocabulary. It was nothing that I thought about. There were, you know, business owners, business people, operators. I mean, we were operators. Merchants. That was a term that I heard when I first began in retail back in the 70s. You know, guys were merchants. Man, we were merchants. And I would have considered myself back in the 70s and the 80s, especially before the lingo kind of changed, not an entrepreneur, but a business guy, an operator, a merchant, if you please, because I was in retailing. And at some point, entrepreneur came into the vocabulary and entrepreneurship became kind of the hip thing. And yeah, I'm hesitating because there's so many people that use the moniker and they label themselves that, and they aren't. There's so many people in the business world who really haven't and aren't operating businesses. I've operated businesses. I've operated businesses for as long as I can remember, and I've learned a thing or two because I've seen a thing or two. What's that insurance company that does that commercial? You know, we've seen a thing or two. There's something to seeing a thing or two. There really is. The NFL season is about to start. College just started this past weekend because today is Tuesday, September the 4th, 2018. So it's the day after Labor Day Monday here in America. And whether it's a freshman player or a rather novice player in a college, on a college team, or a rookie in the NFL, there's something to the power of repetitions. That is the number of snaps that a quarterback can take, the number of plays that a player engages in, the number of times that they see something on the field, and in many cases, something that they've never seen before. Or they've seen it before, but they've not seen it at this speed because the game has changed, because now you're at the pro level or you're at the major college level, and it's not high school anymore, or it's not college anymore. And so many of these things, these players are seeing for the first time. And like most of us, when we see it for the first time, it looks very different than after we've seen it dozens and dozens of times. It feels different. My favorite quote still remains, everything is hard until it's easy. And that's true of everything that you have ever tried. That's true of everything that you have first failed at. Everything that you have succeeded at. Let's approach it from that perspective, shall we? Consider the things that you have done successfully. Basic things. Simple things. Well, they seem simple now. Riding a bike. Learning to skate. Learning to play a musical instrument. Learning to write your ABCs. Learning math tables. It doesn't matter what it is, and you can go back as far as you care to in your childhood, but you didn't get those things right the first time. Now, you may not remember the failure because now you take it for granted. You take it for granted. I haven't ridden a bike in a long time, but swing a bike up here. I'll put my hands on the handlebars. I'll kick my leg over the seat, and I'll plop down, and I'll ride it without any problem at all. But it wasn't that way when I first began to ride a bike, when I had never, ever before been on a bike. I'm really fascinated by our capacity for that, by the way. I'm fascinated by our capacity not only to learn these things, but our capacity to remember how to do these things, things that we haven't done in a long, long time. The fact that we can get on a bicycle and we've never been on one before and struggle so mightily, but then we can be off of one for perhaps years and years and years, and we can get back on one and immediately figure out how to balance. It's pretty amazing, isn't it? And even young kids who I see as my watch my grandkids learn to ride a bike, and their ability to learn to balance pretty quickly. And I'm sure it was probably that way for me too. Pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing. But then we've got this head trash that can get in our way. And mostly the head trash just prevents us from just giving it a go, just from trying. We talk ourselves out of simply trying. And as logical as we can get about it, and as much as we can question it with logical questions, namely, like, what are you afraid of? Well, I'm afraid I'll fall. Okay, you're going to fall. Well, I'm afraid it'll hurt. It might. It's not going to kill you. It's not going to hurt much. We're going to be right here with you, helping you. You'll figure this out, but if you don't get on it and start pedaling and hold the handlebars and just try to go straight, you'll be fine. But, you know, that we're timid. We halt. We hesitate. We procrastinate. We put it off. It's the friction in our head. And the failure that it can cause us is the failure to either not begin or to not begin with enough vigor, go too slow, not learning quickly enough. You take a quarterback in the NFL, and in practice, the more snaps that that quarterback takes in practice against his own team's defense, the better. Ditto for games. And so a quarterback can go into a game, and of course, depending on their skill, depending on how good they are and their natural talent, they may fail colossally at first. They may not, but it's still tough. Talk to the same quarterback and you listen to them on radio and television, and by year two, by year three, by year four, that quarterback's language has changed. They are very quick to say the game has really slowed down. And what they mean by that is their ability to recognize things, their ability to see things, their ability to make adjustments and to figure the game out has dramatically changed over the course of a few years. Just a few years. All of those repetitions, all of those scenes of things that they had not seen before, or they hadn't seen them as fast before, now they see it, they recognize it, just like me jumping on a bike that I haven't been on in a long, long time. I've seen this before. I've done this before. I know how to do this. That doesn't mean I'm going to go win the Tour de France, but I could get on a bike and I could easily navigate for miles and miles and miles and for however long my body would hold out. And you could too, provided you've learned how to ride a bike. Okay, back to business. So I go from the consulting role and I migrate to coaching. And it happens, frankly, it happens quite by accident, but it was a happy surprise. And I found myself really doing more and more leadership, executive kind of things. And it felt more natural. It felt more right, quite simply, because I was not doing the work. I was helping other people get the work done. Namely, my role and my approach was to help them figure it out for themselves. If you go over to my work website, growgreat.com, if you just listen to any episode, you're probably going to hear me make the phrase or say the phrase, you'll figure it out. And when I'm talking to small business owners, and that really is the target audience for that podcast, they will figure it out, but so will you. I don't care what your role is. I don't care if you are a mom who's staying at home trying to raise a bunch of rugrats. I don't care if you're a high-powered CEO. I don't care what your role is right now in life. You have to figure it out because it's your life. Big fan of Jack Welch, always have been, and one of Jack Welch's quotes that I've always loved is, control your own destiny or someone else will. Now, you can take that to mean any number of things, but for me, it's the power of you taking control of your own life, making your own choices, owning those choices, be willing to be accountable for those choices, and don't play the victim. Don't go through life whining, moaning, complaining that other people have done something to you, that other people are the cause for whatever. No, you're deciding. You're deciding. Somebody says something to you, somebody does something to you, you decide how you're going to feel about it. You decide what you're going to do about it, if anything. You decide if you're going to let it roll off your back or if you're going to handle it in some other fashion. You decide. This is your life. So I'm not trying to live your life for you. I tell everybody, I probably say it to somebody every day, I'm busy trying to handle my own, but I'm a great questioner. I know how to ask good questions. I know how to get to the heart of a matter, and I'm not bashful or afraid to get to the heart of a matter, because deep, deep down, I am so driven by my empathy to help people overcome what problem they may have. And I just want to make it as powerful as I can. And I want to help them reduce the friction that mostly is in their head that's causing their failure, and I want to do it as fast as I can. And it's going to sound like bragging, but I'm going to say it. I'm pretty stinking good at it. Now, here's the problem. You know the mechanic who's great at fixing other people's cars? And over on the side of his garage, there's his own car. It's up on jack stands. It's broken down. Now, oftentimes it's that way because he hadn't had time to fix his car. He's busy fixing other people's cars. And I suffer that. True confession, I suffer that. There's not a week goes by that half a dozen people or more I serve, I help, reduce the friction in their head that causes their failure, causes their problems. And meanwhile, yeah, I got my own fish to fry, and I don't even have the pan hot yet. So I go from consulting, which I hated, to coaching, which I loved. And now we have another problem. This became apparent to me really just a couple of years ago. Now I've got another problem, and the problem isn't just a business problem. The problem is a personal problem as well that I'm happy to talk about. I am so ridiculously empathetic, and it's a superpower, and I have been castigated for a number of years about it because I'm just so driven to help people. As some people have criticized me, you know, to rescue people, which it doesn't feel like rescue to me. For me, it feels like, hey, this is a person. They're here. I'm here. I see a problem that I can help them with. And so I do it. For me, it's that old equation of ability plus opportunity equals responsibility. That's how it feels to me. That's how it looks to me. Other people that want to be critical of me will look at it and think that it's different. You know, to them, it looks like, you know, there goes Randy saving another stray dog or cat. It just doesn't look that way to me. It just doesn't feel that way to me. Now, at the same time, these things that are just so easy for me to recognize, because I'm a dot connector, I'm a perceiver, I'm a noticer. And so I notice these things, and I don't want to tell anybody what to do. I don't want to be the guy that shoulds people. Hey, you know what you should do? You should do this. You should do that. But I want to ask questions. My goal is to help people find some deeper understanding of what's going on here. How can I get past this? How can I get unstuck? How can I reduce this friction in my head that's causing my failure? And in some cases, we don't recognize that it's friction in our head. There are a lot of people who are going through life every single day feeling that they are truly, honestly being victimized by the universe. The world is against them. I have heard phrases from people, and you have too, everybody's critical of me. Everybody fill in the blank. Well, now that's not true. I've got my critics, and I've got news for you. If you're going to do anything, if you're going to accomplish anything, if you're going to try anything, you will have critics. I don't have a problem with critics. I just don't, because I understand that that's the price that I have to pay to be really loved by a few, and it's a price I'm willing to pay. You have to make that call and that decision for yourself. So here I am, believing that ability, and I know what my abilities are, plus opportunity equals my responsibility. Meanwhile, I'm kind of wanting to reconnoiter and reshift my business model, and I'm really wanting to get a few people in a circle together. I want to get a few people, business people. I want to get a few small business owners in a virtual room together, because what I discovered a few years ago that wrecks me is helping a client, coaching a client, and most of my engagements are 6 months to 2 years. Well, I'm a guy who's really bent toward deep relationships, and I'm a guy who's bent toward deep vulnerability, because I understand the power that it has for us to get things done and to really get past some things. If we are not willing to open ourselves up and to be vulnerable and to acknowledge that, hey, I'm a human, guess what? You are too. And all the bravado and all the public face that we put on things, especially in this day and age, in this digital age, of wanting everybody to think that we're all that and then some, it's nearly impossible. It's almost impossible for us to put ourselves in a place where we feel comfortable or confident to just shell things down and say, you know what? Life is hard for me right now. And let me tell you why life is hard for me. And I get it. I get it. And I suspect that there are a couple of reasons behind this. Number one, we want to put the best foot forward, and we want this perception of us to be really positive. That's honorable. Secondly, we don't want to come across like, you know, boy, he's whining all the time. He's complaining all the time. Boy, he's throwing his problems out there to the whole world all the time. Doesn't that kid know how to be discreet? Right? So we've got these two things. We got this yin and yang of the whole thing. And I don't pretend to have the answer for how we handle that. Not in this digital age. I really don't. I can't tell you that I have an answer. I can tell you that what I'm talking about today is not, I would not do this on a regular basis. And there's a number of reasons for that. Number one, I wouldn't want to. I wouldn't want to do it for me. I wouldn't want to do it for you. And number two is it would traverse down the trail of moaning, groaning. And it's not in that vein kind of as a one-off, you know? I mean, it's not the habitual kind of a thing, but it's our shared humanity. Think of a blog post. Think of a podcast. Think of any kind of a story, even perhaps a 60 Minutes kind of a story, any kind of a news doc story. And you learned about the struggle that somebody was going through that you, and maybe they were famous, maybe they were not famous at all, but you immediately related, you immediately connected because of the humanity factor. Because deep down inside, we all know that everybody struggles. Deep down inside, we all know that everybody has bad days. Deep down inside, we know that it doesn't matter how many millions of dollars you're making every year, you got problems. And some of those problems are very serious. Money won't fix every problem on the planet. Newsflash. And we all know this. And so when we hear these stories, especially if these stories are done in proper context, where it's not somebody who's acting as though I'm a victim and the world owes me blah, 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 blah. I'm thinking of that story. You probably have seen it. You know, there was a homeless vet, military vet, and I'll apologize in advance because I don't have the facts. I'm completely guilty, like you probably are, of headline reading. And so there's this couple that sees this guy and they do a GoFundMe thing, and then they realize that there's this snag because they are the ones who launched the GoFundMe thing. And there's been some dispute as to, okay, we got to get the money to him. And now he's throwing rocks at this couple like they just leveraged him to make money for themselves. Now, maybe they did, maybe they didn't. I don't know. But every time I see that headline, and I've seen it a handful of times over the last few days, you know, I'm thinking, I mean, if that's true, then okay, it's awful. But okay, dude, you're homeless and you got victimized again. So what are you going to do about it? You know, whining, moaning, complaining. And I don't want to be guilty of that. You don't want to be guilty of that. And so it compels us, I think too frequently, to not share experiences. And that's the point. Long-winded way to get there, I know. But we can be so reserved that we just don't share the experience. And I'll go you one deeper. We don't share the real experience. We share a sugar-coated version of the experience. And I don't want to be guilty of doing that. And I think when we really connect is when we really see the true, honest, authentic vulnerability of someone. We don't see the sugar-coated version. We see the more raw version of it. So I make the decision. And I make the decision in my head a couple of years ago. You know what I'd like to do? You know what I think would be valuable? I learn about peer groups. Didn't know anything about peer groups. I start learning about peer groups, professional peer groups, that is paid for peer groups. That is groups that I'm going to pay to be a member of because I'm like-minded with everybody in the group. And everybody in the group will presumably be able to help me and I'll be able to help them. And we'll meet on some regular basis, whether in person or online, and I'll pay for the privilege to be in the group. And we'll develop these deep relationships and my skin in the game monetarily will make me deem it more valuable. So I'll show up, which is hugely important. I mean, if I don't show up, then not only do I lose, but everybody else in the group loses as well. I mean, I have an impact. I have a big impact on the group. And I'd read this book, The Power of Peers, and it was written by a couple of fellows, one who whose name was Leo Battari. And I hadn't heard, I saw Leo on some little online video interview thing, and I didn't hear him on anything else. And I went looking to hear either one of these guys talk about this thing, and I couldn't find anything. So being the podcaster that I am, I reached out to Leo almost 2 years ago and asked him, are you interested in starting a podcast? Because I'm really interested in what you're doing. I'm really interested in what you know, and I don't know Jack, but I want to know, and I'll help you, and I'm not looking for a paycheck. I'll just help you because I just want guilt by association, and mainly I want to learn. Well, it took about 4 months, but I talked him into it, and we started a podcast, and he hosted it, and I did all the back-end work, and it was called Year of the Peer. Well, the conversations quickly went from, it wasn't just peers that made a difference in our lives, but it was our grandparents and our parents and our siblings and close friends. And I mean, there are a lot of bosses, a lot of people in our life impact us. And the tagline of that podcast was, who you surround yourself with matters. And as those conversations, and I was playing the role of the producer, so I would go and I would get guests and I would arrange the things, and then I would handle all the recording and all the production stuff. And last August, so it's over a year ago, Leo said, next year we need to revamp this thing and you need to co-host this thing with me. Meanwhile, I've been learning. I've been learning about these groups and I've been learning about the dynamic of it. And I through it all, I decided this is what I want to do. I want to migrate and do less of kind of the executive leadership stuff, which I love, but here's what I don't love. And I've kind of intentionally buried the lead, as I am wont to do. Leaving clients when an engagement ends, and professionally they just do, right, is super hard for me. I mean super hard for me. I get so closely connected to people, and I get so involved in wanting to serve people that when an engagement ends at the end of 6 months, at the end of a year, at the end of 2 years, it's painful. It's just it's the only word for it that I can describe that gives it any proper meaning at all is loss. It feels like a loss. And I don't mean a loss of a paycheck relationship-wise. It's just a loss. I get so closely connected to people. Now, sometimes I could be criticized that, well, you get too close. Is that possible? I mean, is it possible to get too close to people? I think it's possible if you get too close to the wrong people, but the people that you like, the people that you love, the people that you want to serve, the people that are serving you, I don't think you can get too close. They're clients, and I understand they're clients, and I only get involved in their lives to the degree that they hang out, you know, open for business sign. So it strictly is on their terms. But I get invested in clients. I care about these people. I want these people to do well. Sure, part of it is symbolic, I suppose, in that their success is my success. I'm trying to serve them. My coaching does not look like coming in saying, well, Jim, here's what you need to do. It consists of, well, Jim, I got a question, and then I'll ask the question, and it sparks the conversation, and we're thinking this thing through. And at some point, Jim may have a problem. I may have seen that problem 100 times before in my career. And I'll say, well, Jim, let me tell you a story. Let me tell you a story about what happened with me. I faced a similar situation, and here's what happened, and here's how I handled it. Now, I'm not telling Jim, now you go handle it that exact same way. Sometimes my story is a story of failure. Let me tell you, Jim, here's what I did, and here's what I tried. And, buddy, it blew up in my face. And here's how I recovered. I'm just sharing experiences with Jim so that Jim can decide for himself what he needs to do. Because guess what? I'm not Jim. Jim's not me. So Jim's got to figure this out. But my role is to help him figure it out more quickly, to help him get there faster. And I'm committed to it. But when you do this kind of work and you go as deep as I go and you get as tethered to people as I do, at the end of an engagement, you go through a period of mourning. I do. Now, I know a lot of coaches and consultants who don't suffer this at all. They're very transactional. Client's a client, client's a paycheck. I'm going to do the best job I can. It's over, done, turn the page. I'm not wired that way. I can't turn the page. What makes me so good, I'll go you one better. What makes me great at the job, at the task, is the fact that I'm wired the way I'm wired. So I'm not going to negate that. I'm not going to deny that. It's a price, though, and it takes a toll. So the practical reality of the friction in my head that's causing my failure is this. I decided, what if I go and I get seven business owners? If I can get seven small business owners and put them in a group, and if I can now wake up in the morning determined to serve these seven, and I'm really trying to build two groups of seven. One, you know, because you're going to have some people that really prefer morning and some people that, hey, I prefer something later in the day. So it's kind of a time zone thing for me. So let's take two groups of seven each, 14 small business owners. That gives me 14 people. 14 people that I can shove all the chips in the middle of the table for, and I can wake up every morning completely dedicated and determined I'm going to serve these 14 people the best I can. And I'm going to do what I do. I'm going all in. I'm going all in on these 14 people. And these 14 people are going to find so much value, and it's going to rock their world. It is going to rock their world. I have no doubt. I'm completely confident that there are 14 people on the planet whose lives are going to be changed big time. And as a result, because this is not a big money play, it's some money, but it's not crazy money, that they're going to stay. They're going to stay for a year, for 2 years, for 10 years. I like that. And if one does leave, if God forbid somebody dies, if God forbid somebody sells their business and they leave for whatever reason, or if they just hate it, I'll have six others. I'll mourn the loss, but it won't be as big a loss because I'll have to focus on the ones who remain. Does that make sense? So friction in my head causing failure is I've never done this before. I've never done this before. I've coached a ton of people over the decades of my professional career. A ton. I know how to do it, but I've never assembled a group of people to do what I'm planning to do. I know how to do it. Intellectually, I know how to do it. I've been connected to the guy that wrote the book for the better part of 2 years. I've been connected to a guy that wrote the book, The Power of Peers. I've learned a thing or two. We have done a number of podcasts. In fact, we did 50 podcasts, Year of the Peer, that became a book that he had no intentions when we started the podcast of even writing. And thanks to the podcast, he wrote and published a book. It's a new book. It's just out. In fact, it just came out, I think today, in fact, maybe yesterday. And the title of the book is What Anyone Can Do. And it's all about how the people that you surround yourself with impact you to do bigger things. And it's great. It's great. So I've got this intellectual capacity. I've got, you know, I was telling somebody the other day, I said, you know, I've never been better. I have never been better. I've got decades of experience. I've seen countless things. I'm real zen. I'm unflappable. I'm real passionate about this. I'm real determined about this. I really believe in this. I really want to do this. I understand the power of the people in the room to help one another. I understand the power of great questions. I understand the power of overcoming blind spots. I mean, it's all just lining up perfectly. There's just this one problem, this friction in my head, of having never done it. Now let's talk about you. There are so many things that you haven't done and you would like to do them. Mine's fear. I'm just going to be real candid with you. Mine is fear. Do I fear failure? No, I don't think so, but I'm not sure. Maybe I do. I've just got fear. I don't fear. I completely believe that the experience is going to be mind-blowing for everybody who gets involved. I'm convinced of that. I am so committed to client experience and customer service. I'm not going to let it be bad. I'm just not going to let it be bad. I'm going to do everything in my power to ensure that it's not just a satisfactory, that it's a great experience for everybody involved. I'm branding this The Peer Advantage by Bula Network. Bula Network's my company. ThePeerAdvantage.com, if you care. And But I've got this friction in my head, and the friction in my head is that little voice that says, you've never done this before. I'm not sure you can pull this off. There's no fear about the value proposition. There's no fear that it's a viable offer. There's no fear that, well, you know, it's, you sure that pricing? There's no fear about that. It's personal. It's much more personal than that. It's the voice in my ears saying every minute of every day, you've never done this before. What makes you think you can do this? And I have to talk back and say, and I do, I'm poised for this. I've spent all my life getting ready for this. I've got all this experience. I got all this know-how. I've spent 2 years studying this and looking at this and thinking about this and reading about this and talking about this. I'm ready. There's logic, and then there's this emotion, and there's these thoughts, right? You've got them. Logically, I know I'm right, but I've still got this friction in my head that's causing me to halt and to hesitate and to not move forward as fast as I could. True confession. What about you? Doesn't matter how illogical it is, right? Come on. We're smart people. I'm a smart guy. You're smart. We know. I know there's absolutely not one thing to be afraid of. There just isn't. I know logically I've got absolutely not one thing to lose except more time. I know that I am 7 people at best. I'm 14 people away from being able to execute a professional dream situation. And a dream situation, not just for me, but a dream situation for 14 people whose worlds will be completely, positively rocked. I believe that. I believe that as much as I believe the sky's blue. Yeah, I had to look outside. Yeah, today the sun's shining right now. It's been raining, but the sky is blue. I believe it. I really believe it. I'm not just trying to convince myself. I believe it. And still there's the friction in my head. You've never done this before, which is also true. Why is it? I'm asking the question. I don't know that I have the answer. Why is it that we can take this one statement, and that one statement in our head, in my case, the statement is, you've never done this before. Why is that one statement, which is true, why does that overcome all the other statements that are also true? You've got many decades of experience in running, owning, operating businesses. You have operated multi-million-dollar businesses since you were in your 20s. You are no longer in your 20s. You're now an old guy. You've seen a thing or two. You have learned how to build cultures, winning cultures. You have learned how to hire people. You have learned how to retain good people. You've learned how to terminate people. You are a master at cash flow management. You understand marketing. You understand sales. You have done these things all of your life. You understand humanity. Empathy is a superpower. Communication is a superpower. Getting to the heart of a matter is a superpower. Those are all true too, but they all just kind of shrink and shrivel away because of this one other truth. You've never done this before. Why is this? I want you to think about your situation. Yes, today's about me, but it's about me in hopes to get to you. I hope that when you look at me and you think you see something, I don't want to be a fake. I don't want to be a phony. I'm not trying to be a hypocrite. I'm a business guy. I'm an operator. I'm a business guy who loves music and loves cartoons and loves the whole digital thing. I really do. I'm on a social media fast, by the way. And I'm going to tell you, one of the reasons that I hit the fast button late yesterday, and I recorded an episode that came out this morning. I do a daily brief at growgreat.com, which is the business website. And I did an episode today, and I said, I'm going to be gone. I'm going on a fast. I don't know how long I'll be gone. And in part, I'm going to tell you, one of the chief compelling reasons that I did it is because of this, because of you, because of Leaning Toward Wisdom. I'm like, I've got to get going again. Leaning Toward Wisdom is important to me. It's an important work. This connection is important to me. I've got 133 people over at the Facebook group. If you're not there, I'd love to have you over there. Just go to facebook.com/ I don't know. There's a link. Go to the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com. I don't know why I even went down that road of trying to remember what the URL would be. But it's a private, closed Facebook group. Just knock on the virtual door, and I'll let you in. And as long as you behave, I'll let you stay in. These are the things that I am. This is who I am. This is what I am. I'm not trying to hide from that. I'm like you. I'm like anybody else. I want to be well thought of. I want to put my best foot forward. But, you know, sometimes putting our best foot forward, if we're going to help people, which is really, which is my calling for sure. If we're going to do that, then we've got to be willing to kind of air some dirty laundry on occasion too. And I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to confess to you that I need to reduce this friction that's in my head that's causing my current failure and causing me to be slower, causing my halting and my hesitating. You've never done this before. Well, I think back and logically, I know there's a ton of things I've never done before, but I did them. I learned them. Did I make it right away? No. Talk to anybody in a professional services game, anybody in the coaching consulting game, and they're lying if they don't tell you that it took them a long time to get the first customer and that it takes them a long time to get most any customer. Now, it depends on what they're doing. You know, I mean, some stuff is very specific. My stuff is not specific. Executive coaching, leadership is not so specific because people have different problems. I've gone in and worked with leaders who were really good communicators, but they had a problem in that they really hated confrontation. They really hated any kind of conflict. I've gone in other situations where somebody's a really poor communicator, but boy, they don't hate conflict. You know, they're a bull in a china closet. I mean, they'll confront anybody about anything and everything, but their communication not so great, not so effective. So it's not a one size fits all. And so as a result, my work historically has not been, oh, you've got problem X. Guess what I do? I solve problem X. It'd be great. It's not my world. I just don't operate in that kind of a space. There are many days that I often wish I did because it would be so much easier when it comes to marketing and sales. My business is so intensely personal. There's such a high degree of trust that's relied upon. I mean, you just have to find somebody that you like, which is a big, big deal, but also then somebody that you trust. Dr. Henry Cloud worded it as well as anybody I've ever heard word it when he talked about these deep relationships that we have and these people that we allow into our lives to serve us and the people that we want to serve, that we all need people with whom we can be careless. And he defined careless not being reckless in the relationship, but careless in the sense that you don't have to filter yourself. You can just shell it down and you can just be who you are, because you know that they're not going to use it against you. This is episode 5013. This is the 13th episode of this new iteration. Yeah, I'm not deep into it, but I am in the fifth iteration. And I didn't start numbering the iterations, by the way, right out of the gate. So I can't tell you how many episodes of Leaning Toward Wisdom I have recorded, but I've recorded a bunch. And reducing the friction in your head that causes your failure is a big deal for all of us. Even those people who appear or maybe genuinely are successful, however we term success. I don't know what the voice is telling you. I've confessed to you what the voice is telling me. You've never done this before. And I'm having a real hard time quietening down that voice and amplifying all of those other voices that are giving me this great laundry list of things that are completely true about me, completely true, completely factual, and giving me every reason that my confidence should just be soaring. That, dude, it's a stone cold lock. And that's how I know I should be feeling. I should have that degree of confidence, but I don't, because I've never done this before. I think you get the point. You've got a little voice, and it's telling you something. And the something that it's telling you, I highly, highly suspect that the something that it's telling you is just one little thing, like mine. And meanwhile, over on the other side of the ledger are all of these compelling, logical, truthful, factual reasons why that one little thing that you're being told, which is also truthful and factual, but why it's not important. It's not important that I've never done this before. I'd never ridden a bike before, but I can now. I'd never recorded a podcast before, but I've been doing it since 2000. I put my first audio file online in 1997. So it's the insurance commercial. I've seen a thing or two. Why is the one little small fact overriding all of the others? I can't tell you. I'm trying to figure it out. I'm working real hard to figure it out, and I'd love to have your help. And the way that you can help me is get inside the Facebook group and let's have a conversation there. I would love to do it. Reducing the friction in your head that causes your failure. Why are you listening to this one little fact when there's a litany of others that override that one, supersede that one, make that one really incidental? Why am I magnifying that? Why am I giving that so much credence, so much volume? And meanwhile, I'm suppressing the others. I've got only one answer, and I don't know that I'm right, but I've got only one answer, and it's just the practical reality of it. And I'm going to tell you, I'm listening to that one more, and I'm without excuse. I'm listening to that one more. I'm listening to every day the endless loop tape that says, you've never done this before. And over time, it's convincing me. It's convincing me how difficult this will be, how tough this will be. And you know what? Sure shooting. It's right. But I also know, was it Henry Ford that said, you know, either way, you're right. You know, if you think you can or you think you can, if you think you can't or you think you can, either way, you're right. I think it was Henry Ford that is having said that. Completely true. Completely true. And right now, my little voice that, in essence, you've never done this before. Here's the inferred meaning of that. You're not going to be able to do it now. You've never done it before, so you're not going to be able to do it now. And sad to confess, I'm listening. Why am I listening? Why aren't I listening to this other voice that's giving me all of these things that I've spent my life accomplishing? I've spent my life developing. I've spent my life learning. I've figured out a thing or two. I've seen a thing or two. Why don't I amplify that voice? I don't know. Maybe I'm looking for excuses. Maybe I'm looking for a soft place to fall if I do fail. Now, let's get to the truth of it. I'm not going to fail. I may not win right out of the gate. I may not be able to get to my first group of seven as quickly as I would like, but I will get there unless I quit. Unless I let the friction in my head that's causing temporary failure, unless I allow that friction in my head, which is in my case, which is this voice telling me this thing, unless I allow that to cause the permanent failure. And you know what? Kids, that choice is completely up to me. Control your own destiny or someone else will. And sometimes that someone can be you, the friction in your head. Hey, I'm going to end today's show, by the way, I end my daily brief over at Grow Great because I kind of like it. I'm kind of proud of it. Be well, do good, grow great. My name is Randy Cantrell. The episode is 5013. The website is leaningtowardwisdom.com. Greetings and welcome inside the Yellow Studio.